Hey guys, it was a little bit of a weird one recording this episode. We had to split it into two different episodes. So the first one is going to be mostly Nathan Polly and Casey Evans. And then we recorded a Liverpool preview with Mark Kastner. Polly had to dip out for that one, so it's me, Nathan, and Casey talking with Mark. So here is the first episode of those, and I hope you guys enjoy.
Encouraged, not burdened by the history that they create. They know what is expected of them. They are Manchester United.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to another episode of the Busby Babe podcast. Switching things up today, I'm Nathan Heinschel. I'm hosting, and Colin is live tweeting the Manchester United women's game currently at the moment as they play PSG. Colin is still here on the podcast and joining us as well. Polly Questel. That was not Polly. That was Colin that said something.
Basically, Colin's here, but he's not paying attention.
Clearly. And then, of course, joining us as well, a new contributing writer to the Busby Babe. You might have read his piece that just came out today, that was published today on August 16th, Casey Evans. Casey, how's it going?
Good, thanks. It's a bit warm, but yeah, good otherwise.
So I think we'll just get right into it, guys. How are the vibes? How are we feeling?
If you have to ask, you can't afford it.
As you guessed, as I stopped at, it's a bit warm, but I'm fine. You can tell the vibes are probably a very low, low point. As I was out having a tea or dinners, as the wider footballing or wider world call it, seeing the numerous links of there's this midfielder we're interested in. We're definitely not getting him, but we'll say we're going to spend 50 million on him. Yeah, the vibes are at a very low point, to put it simply.
Basically, what Casey is saying is that he's still alive and that he can be brought down by this club.
As the script once said, I'm still alive, but I'm barely breathing.
So. I am already dead. You cannot kill what is dead. There is nothing that this club can do that bring my vibes down. I did have a fever last night. That kind of stunk. But that was unrelated. This club, a 4-0 loss to Brentford doesn't hurt me anymore.
Well, before we get on to the loss, I mean, I think we can address some of today's news first, just because that's more interesting to talk about, I think. Would you say you're being brought more to life, Polly? At the thought that we get another used toy from Real Madrid?
Nope.
But you mean signing 29-year-old Rafael Varane, who's barely touched the field for Manchester United. Now, if we go get Casemiro, who's 30, you don't think that's going to turn out better?
Nope. I mean, it just makes me think of Nemanja Matic, who was a great signing in 2017-18. And then it was like, oh, but, you know, he doesn't stay 28 forever. And even at in 20, even when they signed him, it was like, cool. But what happens in 2 years? So, even if you sign Casemiro, what happens in 2 years? Made even more questionable by the fact that you're not ready to compete for a title this year or next year. So, if everything else went perfectly, which by all means it won't, because this is a dumpster fire. If everything went perfectly and you were ready to compete in 2 years, then what kind of Casemiro do you have on the pitch? It just becomes a position of need again. And when money is clearly tight at this club, maybe you should spend it smartly. So you don't have to spend it on the same positions over and over again, which is just going to keep you in a situation where money is tight and you're not fully putting the right team on the pitch.
Not to mention the, sorry, just tuning in here.
to build on that. In addition to paying, you know, $50 million for somebody who is, what, 30, 31 now? You would also, assuming, you know, he actually wants to go to United, his wages would probably be in the range of Varane, which is the third highest earner on the team right now at like 350K.
Casey, to go to you, I'll give you a question prompt here. Why are Real Madrid trying to treat us like they're Bayern Munich?
Why are Real Madrid trying to treat us like we're Bayern Munich? Is it?
No, like they're Bayern Munich.
They're Bayern Munich. Okay, right.
Yeah. They ran the legs down, and then they're like, hey, do you still want this player that we know you fancied 6 years ago?
I don't think they will get rid of Casemiro. I think this is very much like, we were like, okay, we need a midfielder. We need a defensive midfielder. Who's the best defensive midfielder in the world? It's like, Rodri. Okay, sweet. We're not getting Rodri. That's a good start. Who's the second best defensive midfielder in the world? It's a bit of a questionable one, but Casemiro is the most likely to come of the people who are very unlikely to come. So I don't know. I think this is more, instead of Varane, where it seemed to be, they'd obviously identified some problems with Varane and trying to get rid of him. Casemiro is very much playing to the peak of his abilities in the middle of the Real Madrid team. It seems like he trusts him still. Cancelotti still trusts him to an extent. Like, we weren't seeing Camavinga replace him at any point. We were seeing him come on late in games. Like, he's still Champions League final, is right in the middle of there as their midfield general. So it's kind of like, okay, we've just decided, yeah, that guy sounds good. Will they take 50 million because he's 30 years old? And the answer is no. And as Paulie said, you don't want to kind of do that, because in 2 years' time, you'll be like, well, Casemiro's 32. He started getting injured. Who do we get now? It's like, oh, yeah, someone like, for example, the other name that we've been linked with today, Moises Caicedo, who's now 25, improved himself in the Prem and kind of is now worth like 60, 70 million. And you're like, well, you've just spent 100 million to get a player that you should have got 2 years ago for the probably less than or similar to what you were going to pay for Casemiro now.
You know that scene in Sunderland Till I Die where they're like doing the recruitment, and on the board in the back you could see like the last name written on it is Zlatan Ibrahimovic, and it was like, all right, that's pretty outrageous, but yeah, he was available for free that year, and if you're Sunderland, why not take a shot? That just seems like that's how our recruitment goes right now, is, oh, who else is available? Like yeah, it's exactly like what Casey said. It's like, just go down the list of good players until you're like, maybe that one will leave his club.
Well, you mentioned the Sunderland Till I Die, and I was about to make the joke that Sowade is going to have to retire before he can even start the hashtag McAsimiro. So, because we know Scott McTominay was on that recruiting board as well in Sunderland. Additional news, midfield, it's going to be a hot topic for us for at least the next 13 days. The guy who's bringing the five down points last week is looking a little less likely now. Adrian Rabiot wants more money than we want to pay him. Is Sense going to finally take over this transfer?
No, it's not common sense. It's just that he wants more money than we're willing to pay him.
If not common sense, yeah, then dollars and cents, right?
It was very clear, like, very early on, you were kind of seeing, like, the little tidbits of, he's going to ask for more money than we're willing to give him. And I thought when we said, oh, he's going to ask for more money than we're willing to give him, he's going to ask for like 108K a week when we're offering 120. I mean, the latest reports are he's asking for more than Bruno Fernandes, I think is the general vibe of that, which is a lovely, I think that was Jamie Jackson who said that, which is a lovely thing. I think the thing with Rabiot is, there was a small, minute piece of logic involved in having Rabiot. And that was when he was at PSG and he was playing centrally in a pivot, he was a very good player. And that may have been 3 years ago, but the fact is, since then, when he's been at Juventus, he hasn't played that role at all. Really, he's kind of been playing at this like weird left mid / left wing position when he plays for France, that's kind of like, we need someone who can shuttle the ball really high up the pitch. So we're going to play Rabiot there. And it kind of doesn't make sense. I think the problem with Rabiot is like he's a much older Scott McTominay. He has the exact same problem with Scott McTominay, where I look at him and I'm like, I do not understand what sort of footballer you're meant to be, and you are 27 years old. Like, I do not know what you're good at. I do not know what your coach wants you to do. I do not know how you fit into the majority of teams. Like, what
he just looks like a footballer.
Yeah, like it's one of those things where you're like, okay, so what do you so what are you meant to be? Okay, you were a pivot player 3 years ago. Can you play a pivot player now? Yeah, okay. 15 million. It's a fair gamble to make if you can't out the budget. 200k a week. Not the gamble then becomes a lot less reasonable, because you're there like, okay, if he's bad and if his numbers stay the way they are, they're worse than Scott McTominay's, then you're now lumbered with yet another player on a ridiculously large contract. It's basically just filling up a squad spot that you then cannot replace with a much better player along the road, and therefore spoiling the soup even more. The metaphor that I'm going to start is United is a lovely, lovely, we're trying to aim for a lovely, lovely soup. We had a nice soup going. It wasn't a great soup. It wasn't the best soup you'll ever taste in your life, but it was a nice stew. And then we just went, here's some garlic. And this garlic was called Cristiano Ronaldo. And we poured it all in. And we're like, oh no, now there's too much garlic in the soup. And we've been trying to solve it ever since. And this is not going well.
This is a tough metaphor, because I'm a garlic girl. Let's not compare Ronaldo.
Too much garlic. It's like imagine you like garlic, more garlic than that. That's the put it that way.
Maybe I just dump the whole thing of crushed red pepper in there, and it's just like it's too spicy for anybody to eat.
I had a feeling that this was gonna happen eventually. I don't remember the details. I just vaguely remember talking to somebody, whether it was a year ago, 2 years ago, or whatever, of being like, if United continue to do what they're doing right now, you're going to get to this point where players do not want to come. And that's the report that I saw today was not so much that Real Madrid were like, we don't want to sell Casemiro. It was Casemiro was like, nah, I'm cool here. I want to stay. And they were linked with that guy from Atletico Madrid, Kuna or something, whatever. And he was like, nah, I'm good. I'm good, fam. And it's just all of a sudden, like a year ago, they waited an entire year for Jadon Sancho, and it was ridiculous because Jadon Sancho wanted to come to United, and he just didn't force the issue with Borussia Dortmund, and he said, all right, I'll play another year, and it was a terribly kept secret that he was going to come because he wanted to come, and Rafael Varane wanted to come to United, even though it was probably like a situation of they were willing to pay him twice as much as Real Madrid, and Cristiano Ronaldo simply wanted to get the hell out of Juventus, and United offered him a place to go, but players wanted to come to United, and now they don't, and it just speaks to the dysfunction is, it's not a secret anymore. It's out there in the open that people can just look at the club and go, well, what am I gonna like? What happens now, or what happens next? And I think I said this around the time, or like a year ago, where you sell players on a certain idea of here's what we're going to do. Here's how we're going to use you. And anybody can look at this team the club and how they make specific plans. We're going to go with Louis van Gaal for 3 years. Then we're going to hand it over to Ryan Giggs. And after 2 years, they bin that plan. They gave David Moyes a 6-year contract. All these different things where as soon as something happens, they just turn it on a dime. Like, oh, we sacked Mourinho. We hired Ole Gunnar Solskjaer to be the interim coach. And he's going to take us until the summer. And then we're going to find a new manager. And then, we handed him a new contract in March. How do you – whatever the club tells you of, okay, we're going to do this and you're going to play here, how do you know in 2 years it's not going to be drastically different? And players talk to each other. And I just think that right now – everybody is fully aware, well more aware than we are, of what's going on in that dressing room, whether players are happy here. You probably don't, you know, Paul Pogba was agent Pogba, like recruiting Varane to come to this club. I just don't think you have anybody doing that at this club right now because they're all kind of unhappy and it is a shambles and they doesn't seem like there's a a light at the end of the tunnel coming anytime soon. And because of that, as United are throwing stupid money around, players are still being like, nah, that I'm good. I don't need a raise to go play for you. I'll stay here on my current wages. Thank you, though.
I mean, also, we're hitting that historic point that we've all been joking about for years, where it's now coming to the point where the guys who were kids when are now like the 21, 22 year olds, well, 18 to 22 year olds that are coming into the game and such, weren't watching football when United were in their pomp, so to speak. Like, you don't have that nostalgia factor anymore of, I remember United were really good as a kid, and I had that deep-seated love inside my heart of, like, oh, like a deep-seated feeling inside my heart that United were this massive entity and unstoppable juggernaut, and I want them to get back where they are. Like, I made a joke on Twitter. I said, oh, yeah, 7 years old, Sergi Gomez, who's just moved to City, was watching them get beat by 8-1 by Middlesbrough. But then you watch his announcement video and he's 10 years old with an Etihad shirt on, David Silva on the back, like chilling and like going, oh, yeah, in Barcelona. So you're getting to the point now where there's not even like a nostalgic. There's not even like, oh, a deep seated like, oh, I remember from when I was young, United were good, that sort of thing. They're like, there's no back end to it. There's like, oh, the United here and now. And like what Paulie said, like, you can see United here and now are an absolute mess. I mean, I'm going back to sort of reports that Moises Caicedo apparently is a massive United fan. Like, his family are very big United fans from what I've heard and what I've read on Twitter and stuff in the past. Like, but those players are going to become fewer and far between as we go on. And as if you keep being a complete and utter disjointed mess, what do you have to offer to them? Oh, yeah, we can get you back to this club that you do not remember in the slightest. Sweet, okay, we can offer you a lot of wages, but they can offer me a lot of wages, and they have a better plan, and they have a better... Because, like, we're saying, oh, I can offer you a lot of wages. Bruno Guimarães and Boubacar Kamara are two of the midfielders we should have definitely been in for, and they're being given ridiculous wages by Aston Villa and Newcastle, respectively. Like, they are... Other teams in the Prem can offer them a lot of money with a much better project and a much better understanding of where they're going to play in the team. So, we don't even have the wage idea anymore. Like, Nottingham Forest are getting better midfielders in than United currently have.
And
so you're kind of in this weird...
Yeah, it goes back to, like, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's plan when he first got here was go for those British players, and there was some Brexit stuff in there. The United were trying to, like, guard against Brexit, but that was the thing. He looked at the team before that and said... It's just a bunch of high-paid players who don't care about this. And he said, let's go for the... It was the British ones because he said, these are still the players that when they grew up, Manchester United was the best. And ultimately, whether you were a fan of... If you were a fan of Everton or Tottenham or Brighton, you know, anybody that basically wasn't Chelsea or Arsenal or Liverpool, if Manchester United were going to call you, like, if you were going to be a footballer and Manchester United called you one day, you wanted to go there because they were the best. They were the winners. And that's what he targeted with those English players. The same way that Europeans all seem to dream of playing for Real Madrid. Unless you're Dutch, then you dream of playing for Barcelona. And now, United don't have that. They don't have that advantage anymore. As Casey said, you had a player who's... He just signed for City, and when he was 10 years old, David Silva was playing for City. They grew up watching that. They're growing. The kids now are growing up. That Manchester City, Liverpool are the dominant teams. You're listening to your older brother or your uncle talk about, oh, there once was this guy named Alex Ferguson, and you know, it's just becoming folklore almost. We're so far removed from that, and United haven't adapted. And as Casey was also alluding to, like, they haven't adapted to wages changing, in that they can no longer call up Fulham and be like, right, we want Louis Saha, and Louis Saha being like, well, Manchester United, they're interested, fine, I want to leave, because Fulham can just pay Louis Saha exactly what Fulham don't need 12 million pounds anymore to give up a top striker, because back then Fulham getting 12 million pounds was enough for them to sign three new players and keep the lights on for another year. And now everybody's bringing in absurd amounts of money through television. Nobody needs to sell their players. They'll sell them on their own terms. And that's it. and United have not adapted to that at all. They have not adjusted their recruitment at all. I think we spoke about this last week, how I said they're scared of resumes. Like, everybody needs a resume. They could have signed Moises Caicedo for £5 million like a year ago. And instead they were, oh, but what has this guy done? He's done nothing. So let's let him go to the Premier League, and then in 2 years we'll come in for him when he's 20 times more expensive, because they just refuse to take a chance on some of these young guys who have no resume. They're waiting for them to become established. Yuri Tielemans,
the last young guy they took a chance on, they sold for a profit. I know he didn't work out, but that's the only player they've made money on in the last, what, decade?
Yeah, Yuri Tielemans did a loan with Leicester and then waited to sign a permanent deal with them, because he was waiting for United to come in for him, and they just wouldn't. And now they're linked with him every other day.
I mean, you see, like Chelsea are spending stupid amounts of money. Like, they're offering, like, the window's looking at, like, closer to $300 million, which is
ridiculous. Money, baby.
Yeah, with,
yeah, but they're also Ed Woodwarding. Like, I'm not that scared of what they're doing.
But the ones that, the transfers that I'm, like, kind of, like, obviously, like, they're signing some weird players, but, like, they're also signing players that I'm like, okay, that makes a lot of sense, and you're just basically buying for 3 years' time. Like, Akani Chukwuma from Aston Villa, they're now signing this guy I've literally never heard of. Is it Casade from Italy? Like, yeah, they could be just Marco.
But some of those guys are in 3 years' time. Like, you don't, like, different manager on all of a sudden it looks differently. Like, Anthony Martial and Memphis Depay were signed for not for Louis Van Gaal, but for the next guy, and it's just like, oh, okay.
But yeah, the thing is like, I've never heard of him. They could be Marco Marin in it all over again. But if he, like, is, like, in 1 year, like, oh yeah, he's a really great player, we're gonna just put him in the team, and you're like, oh, okay, they've just bought him for like $5 million, and he's
right.
Actually, like,
right, and United need to do that, and they're just not.
Casey, was it you that made the joke on Twitter the other day where it was like, give Sarri back Chelsea real quick, I want to see something?
Yeah, that was me. it's a Sarri team. It's never left being a Sarri team. As long as Jorginho remains in that team can easily be a Sarri team. And you put Koulibaly in there, it's a Sarri team. It's in so many ways. It's just Chelsea in general are just confusing to me. I can't say much. I support United, the most confusing team in the league. None of their decisions make any sense. There is
They're just stupid.
Yeah. Well, one thing I want to rewind back on about maybe like 5 or 6 minutes of Pauly monologue ago, brought up Dutch players who grew up dreaming of playing for Barcelona. Sergiño Dest now being linked to Manchester United. Thoughts?
America.
Sergiño Dest. See, the thing is like, I while I was on holiday recently, not to flex.
you get to take vacation?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't get to take vacation.
I should have been able to tell from the accent.
But I was.
Nathan, don't you know nobody in Europe works during August?
It's too warm. So I was reading the Barcelona Legacy, and a lot of that's Cruyff's linking and speaking of that. So basically, while I was reading that entire thing, in my head, I was like, where does Ten Hag fit in here? In general, I kind of, obviously, Sergiño Dest is very much what Dani Alves was, but not as good in any way, shape, or form. So I thought that Ten Hag was going to be more pragmatic, and the way that he's building his team was being a lot more pragmatic. You throw in Sergiño Dest, you're basically saying, if this system does not work for T, we are going to get murdered down the right-hand side. And that is an interesting conundrum to put in your team.
News for you, Casey. The way he set up at Brentford, if the system didn't work for to a T, they were going to get murdered, and they did, and he never changed it.
Yeah, this is what I mean. Like, he's very.
So I don't think Eric Ten Hag is going to be pragmatic. Eric Ten Hag has given no indication so far that he'll be pragmatic. He's given every indication that he's just going to do it his way, and if it doesn't work, it's not his fault.
Yeah. See, the thing was, obviously his system is very interesting. Like, I thought he was going to be a bit more pragmatic in terms of, obviously Dalot was a bit more up and down, and the sort of like, he's a bit taller and he can interchange him with Lissandro Martinez on set pieces, same with Shaw and all this sort of stuff. So I was like, okay, that makes sense. Sergiño Dest is a wildly separate player to anything that I thought of. It's basically saying the right hand side is to attack. Defending, what is this? What is this thing that you're thinking? And to say that we're not getting Rabiot, who's going to be the right hand side of central midfielder, I think, if Frankie Dion was on the left. So yeah, to now say that we're not getting Rabiot, who would usually fit in and protect that right hand side, like so Henderson when Trent does that role. You're basically going Hail Mary and hoping for the best. So, yeah, Dest is a player that I would be happy with if I understood the system in which it fits to make it that he doesn't have to defend that much. But in this current United team, I am very worried for simple facts.
I wouldn't worry. I don't think they're going to sign him.
So something we talked about, I believe it was with Carl when he was on the pod, the thought of if United were strong enough in their convictions to back Erik ten Hag's project in whatever means, shape, or form that required, where he was going to choose system over pragmatism, and he was going to fit square pegs and round holes to get whomever's going to stick around, you know, starting to get used to the system and figure out exactly where the holes are that really need to be plugged. Does a potential signing like Sergiño Dest like signal that to you then, that it's like, I'm going to settle for, as long as we don't get relegated this year, like this is just a lost year no matter what, which I know a lot of people can't swallow. But
yeah, I mean, I was reading the book. I think that's the same book that Carl was referencing when he was talking about the Entorno, and I mean Christ's autobiography as well. So I was reading through it. And the one that stuck out to me was Van Gaal's buy-in, which was wholly unsuccessful. And he got sacked and replaced by Heinicks, who went and won the treble with Bayern. So a good change there. But his conviction was he would play with two shuttling midfielders, a 10 that's more free, which was Thomas Muller, wingers who cut in, and right back and left back who kind of... flew a bit about. Lam pushed up a lot higher than he would do under Pep Guardiola when he became kind of like a central defensive midfielder. So that's what I was thinking, was what Ten Hag was trying to kind of simulate. I think he obviously has an idea of the way that he wants United to play in the end game. The problem is that you are laboured in a 50-50 house of, you either go all in and try and play the game that you want to, i.e. a Marcel Bielsa, a Pep Guardiola to some extent, and just see what happens and hopefully it ends up working eventually once you get all your signings, get everyone in place. The problem is you're now in the sense of these footballers are not good enough to make top six, are not good enough to probably even make top seven, eight, because they're not... I can't remember who said it on... it might have been on the radio or TV, was like, if you look at every team in the Premier League, whether they won or lost, they had an identity. This United team has... there's an obvious identity that they want. This is nowhere near where they are now. And you're in this like long-term thing where, yeah, Ten Hag could just go, I'm just going to play how I want to play, and whether it works, why not? But the issue is you live by the sword, you die by the sword. In that sort of sense of, if it goes horribly, horribly wrong, United will just sack him. And they will just go, oh, well, I guess we got it wrong. And
he needs to behave better then. He needs to behave better because he's increasing... like, his comments after that Brentford match, all they're going to do, if he continues to act like that, all they're going to do is increase the chances of it going wrong. You cannot come out... you just got walloped 4-0. Your second goal was conceded because Brentford just sat on a goal kick, because United, for the however many goal kicks they had over the first two games, they did the same thing as Brighton. They did the same routine out of every goal. So it's all right. Erik ten Hag knows how he wants to play, and this is what he wants to do, and he's instructed that to his players. There was no adaptation. There was no, oh, wait, they've got two forwards. Like, I'm David De Gea, and I've got Lisandro Martinez to my left and Harry Maguire to my right. They have two forwards sitting right at the edge of the box. So as soon as one of us touches the ball, they're going to be on top of these two guys. And there's my midfielder who's going to drop down into the middle here. They've got a guy right on top of them. And there's no ability to adapt and say, what other options do we have here? What else can we do? Instead, it's just go with that routine that's been taught to them. And they can see the goal because Brentford are sitting on it because they have done it every single time so far. It only took one game for Brentford to be like, oh, damn, they do the same thing every time. And then after the game for Ten Hag to be like, we lost because of individual mistakes. No, no, no. I'm sorry. You have to take some sort of responsibility there. I think it was Vince Lombardi who said when a team wins, it's because the players performed, and when a team loses, it's because the coach didn't do a good enough job. And that has to be an element of any coach, like, because you know who would throw his players on the bus? Mourinho. And Ralf Rangnick did it, and that's not going to let you last long term. Erik ten Hag is not here to win for 2 years and then go somewhere else and another guy comes in and takes the same players and wins. Again, the way that, you know, Real Madrid or Chelsea are built on. Erik ten Hag's here to build something. He's got to be here long term. You can't throw your players under the bus after game two. There has to be some sort of element of something on yourself. The Athletic ran this article yesterday, which was like, my eyes almost popped out of my head, where it just it kept saying, here were the tactics. United made individual errors. They left one man back on a corner kick. And instead of saying, maybe they should have left more than one man back on a corner, it was, well, they left one man back on a corner and it would have worked, but Harry Maguire made a bad individual decision. And because of that, they conceded another goal. And it's like, at a certain point, if they're standing in the wrong position or if they're making the wrong decisions with the ball, the manager has to say, maybe I haven't communicated the tactics well enough with this team. Like, the way that this team is currently covered right now is so different than it was 2 years ago, where an individual mistake was categorized as that's bad coaching. And now it's, that's just the player who's crap. And like, if Erik ten Hag is going to continue to just be like, well, individual mistakes, and then, I'm going to make the players run however much the difference is because Brentford ran more than us. You had 67% of the ball. Of course Brentford ran more than you. They were defending the whole game. Yes, you should have punished the players, but the application of numbers there is really poor. And if you're just going to sit there and say, I'm going to play my way no matter what, you have to be willing to say some of this is my fault. And if you're going to go out there, and we could see it with our eyes, we know the players are not good enough to play his way. There are certain players that just cannot play that style. And if you try to do it, they will lose. But Erik ten Hag cannot publicly come out and blame them. That's going to cause you to lose the dressing room. And then you'll have no chance of ever getting in the right players and getting everybody to buy in.
It's like the movie Glory Road, where the coach realizes, like, hey, yeah, you got to go play your game, but you also play my game.
It's like, of all the sports movies, that's the one you chose, was Glory Road.
Hey, man, it's the one that came to me.
It's because you didn't watch Mighty Ducks, but
more on that later. But yeah, I think that Erik ten Hag is going to have to compromise at some point. And he already has to some extent, just because he hasn't gotten a lot of the players that he wants. But even with the squad that's
how's he compromised?
Here, it's
coming
less compromise and more just not getting what you asked for. But at this point, it's more than just not having players he wants. He doesn't have depth past the players that he has. If he's going to survive, you know, past what people are saying, Erik 10 weeks at this point, if he's going to survive, he's going to have to adapt and he's going to have to give these players some leeway because there's not really an alternative.
Yeah. I mean, like, the thing was there's been criticisms that have been a kind of bit more like, okay, but explain to me how he does it differently. And there's been criticisms around, but like, okay, he definitely should have done it differently. For example, everyone was like, oh, why has he played Eriksen as the six? It's a really physical team. Why has he done that? I'm like, well, because if he played the physical guy, he would have lost the ball anyway because he cannot take a touch under pressure. So like you're saying, like, okay, if you play McTominay at the six instead of Eriksen, he wins. We don't concede that goal. It's like, well, no, we might not concede that goal because it was lucky. Like, I mean, like in realms of possibility, the fact that it basically Eriksen loses the touch, it gets intercepted instead of it bouncing so whatever, it lands at Jensen's feet and he just goes and scores. Fair enough. We might not have scored it if McTominay
that goal because Eriksen for the ball went towards the ball and McTominay has never run towards the ball in his life except when he's defending.
We might not concede that goal because he lost it a bit deeper and the defenders might have been able to set that. But the thing is like the thing we probably would have conceded a goal another way because the guy wasn't as technically secure as Eriksen. That's an understandable point. Eriksen at six is a completely understandable point. It is completely down to the personnel. Yeah, it might have been a mistake for one goal. It probably wasn't a mistake for the entire match. Taking Martinez off, why I don't get, because I kind of messaged it half, but like, okay, Martinez conceded the one goal, and debatably, it was a very poor bit of decision-making on his end. It's been completely put against his height. It's not that anything to do with that, but I don't understand why, after you've spent 60 million on a centre back for how he passes out of the back, and also he spent the entire game, bar that goal, being completely fine against Ethan Tony in the air and winning the ball back. Yeah, the second balls are questionable, but we won most of them if the actual guy in the midfield ran for them. I mean, that's kind of like a compromise in that point. The smallest compromise you can say, partly as you look at me in a sort of sense. But then going, oh, we're taking him off. And everyone goes, oh, yeah, because he's short and he can't win an aerial duel. It's like, no, it isn't. It's because, can someone explain to me why? It's like, why have you put Varane on? You basically said, okay, we're going to put Varane on. What does Varane do better? Like, does Varane win more balls in the air? You basically, like, everyone's like, oh, yeah, set pieces, though. I'm like, well, the fact is, like, I think Rio Ferdinand once said that when they were defending set pieces under Ferguson, if Gary Neville was basically being marked out by a taller guy, they'd just swap. Or they'd play Neville in a sort of free roll in the box and they just bring someone in and just go, here you go, he's marked, Neville, just make sure he doesn't get bounced around in the box. And that's fair enough. But now you're looking at this sort of system, I'm like, okay, so you've got your 60 million centre back that you just subbed off at halftime. That's an interesting decision. You took off Shaw, you brought on Malacia. That's an interesting decision. I just don't, the decision making doesn't really join up in a lot of senses, I think, at this moment in time.
Scapegoated them.
Yeah, I kind of
like, they basically conceded a bunch of goals. People are mad about Shaw on that fourth goal. Like, Shaw was beat because the dude had a head start, and if he does anything, he had his hand on his shoulder. If he does anything there, it's a red card.
And
he's getting sent
off. Ball as well. Like, it's the perfect ball to him. Like, the thing was, is like, he kind of scapegoated them. And I don't know if that's because he feels like he has to kind of pander to De Gea. I don't know. The fact is obviously, as we've said, like, De Gea, that game, conceded us two goals and played a very big hand in and conceded two more. And the change at halftime was two centre-backs. The one that basically everyone had saying is too short to defend in the box, and the one who everyone kind of says was at fault for the fourth goal. That seemed like very short-sighted. And then you kind of just... I'm not going to fully fall on the defense. The attack was terrible.
They conceded goals because of structural issues, and then he basically went, right, it's the center back and the left back, when it was like, no, this is exactly the problem that you were supposed to fix, Eric. Like, is everybody kept looking at the center backs and being like, bad, that's the issue, when in fact it's been structural. It didn't come to me at the time, but yeah, like, removing David De Gea at halftime would have made a very loud statement, and I think that could have been pretty effective. We've seen coaches do that in other sports, and it's better in other sports, not so much in football. But like, otherwise, he basically picked the defense because that's where he has other players. Like, oh, I have Rafael Varane on defense. He's won four Champions Leagues. If I bring him on, Like, no one's going to bat an eyelash. And, oh, this Tyrell Malacia had a good preseason. Everybody will enjoy that if he comes on.
Yeah.
And
but if he brings up Tom Heaton and then he concedes more goals, everyone's like, why have you just took off David
exactly.
De Gea?
And then yeah. The Fred McTominay thing is exactly what Solskjaer dealt with of they both stink, so I picked one to start and he stunk, so I replaced him with the other one. And then the next week that guy retained his place and he stunk, so I replaced him again. He had no, who else is he going to take off? Like, because he just doesn't have anybody else that could play. It just seemed like he went with defenders because that's what he had. But that just in turn seemed like he was scapegoating the left side of his defense, which a little rough.
Do you guys think at some point, sorry, Casey.
I was going to say, and also the deep persistence to keep playing Alanga on the right hand side is very much annoying me. When Marcus Rashford is not playing well, do not bring on Alanga at the right. I do not get why we keep doing this. I don't know.
I don't understand why they keep, like, I get why you want Jadon Sancho to play on the right side, but until you start using him properly and you can get him the ball on the right side, stick him on the left because Rashford's not doing anything and Sancho's better on the left than he is on the right. And overall, when you are fully flying, it is better to have if Rashford's on form, it is better to have Sancho on the right. But right now, if your left side isn't doing anything and you can't use the right side, you're making your team weaker by just refusing to move Jadon Sancho around.
Kind of on that same note, do you guys think at some point he's going to switch Maguire and Martinez back? Or do you think he's kind of set on keeping them, you know, Martinez left, Maguire right?
I think that's set. I think yeah. Carl asked a question in the preseason. He's very much likes the fact of the build-up, having a left-sided defender on the left-hand side and left-sided on the right-hand side. That's why he was playing Telles there in preseason.
Also seems very Dutch. Like, Van Gaal used to do the same thing with Daley Blind. Whatever benefit you get out of Maguire playing on the left, why would you put Martinez on the right? I could see it potentially happening if Martinez gets hurt or is out of the team and you're playing Maguire and Varane or Maguire and Lindelof. But, like, with Martinez, it would make no sense.
Yeah, I think, like I said before, I was saying, like, I mentioned Pep. And in Pep's first season, he very much just kind of forced through his philosophy. I think Yaya Toure played centre defence mid for a bit because he didn't have a centre defence midfielder. There was kind of a lot of players who was like, you might not be here long term. You're probably not playing the role that you're going to do, but these certain players are playing the role that I want you to play long term, so that's where they're going to play. You see that with Jadon Sancho on the right. You see that with maybe Bruno Fernandes in Bruno Fernandes at 10, maybe Eriksen in deeper areas, Lisandro Martinez, Maguire, all that sort of stuff. The issue is that the players that he's getting to fill in the roles in between are fundamentally breaking the team in such a way that you cannot, those players that are now trying to get fit in and get comfortable in the positions that you want them to play long term are getting worse. So we mentioned Sancho, he might want to play in the right long term. He's not getting the ball. Like, Diogo Dalo has now adapted this sort of situational thing where he does an Alex Telles impression of he gets to about the final third and he tries to boot it to find Ronaldo, or he just plays it inside. Like, he doesn't do the overlaps. He doesn't hit the touchline. He doesn't cut inside. He just kind of stops and just goes, okay, I don't know what to do with this. I'm either going to kick it in or I'm just going to get with Sancho on his own, and then I'm just going to kind of back off from this and hope we don't get caught in transitions. So you go do what you do. And the thing is like, yeah, the difference is like long-term or short-term. Long-term, it'll work, hopefully, if you get the right players in, if you can kind of fit it around. Like, even if you get certain stopgap players who are just kind of like, you're okay enough just to be here for a bit and then become rotation and kind of just make us so the players that I actually want to work around long term are better. But at the moment, as we've seen against Brentford and Brighton, those players are just not going to work. Like, we're still going to get caught in transitions. We're still not going to be able to play out from the back. We're still not going to have a striker who stays in the box and kind of acts as a poacher and is available once we actually do the good things on the right hand side. All those things are very fundamental parts of Ten Hag's game and very fundamental parts of what he wants each player that are playing in their current position that he wants them to play in long term need to have working for them to play to their best ability. And at this point, it's just making everyone look worse. And if you Ten Hag will then end up in a situation where it's like either adapt or die. If he doesn't, then the new manager comes in and a new manager goes, well, I want seven different players because I want to play a different formation.
I like the money ball usage there, adapt or die.
That cannot be romantic about baseball.
All my contributions to this podcast so far are just movie references.
What's it feel like being me on the podcast, Colin?
It's okay. Man United women beat PSG 1-0, by the way, so I'm free to pay attention now. Also,
you talk about the Mighty Ducks. Then is that how you work?
No.
The Mighty Ducks came together as a team way better than Manchester United have.
What does Erik ten Hag have to do to become the Minnesota Miracle Man?
The Minnesota Miracle Man?
That's Gordon Bombay.
That's Gordon Bombay's nickname. He's the Minnesota Miracle Man.
Even I've watched the films and I completely forgot that. So.
How does Erik ten Hag become the Manchester Miracle Man? Because it's looking rough right now.
At this point, he wins a game.
So one illusion that made me uncomfortable today and yesterday that I've seen, Frank de Boer's name has been brought up now. Do we feel that is just Twitter being Twitter?
I've got to say that was me, so I'm not gonna. I like how you said Twitter. I've seen this illusion that I'm not really happy with. I feel like you knew that I'd done that.
My answer is yes. Like not a definitive yeah, that's Twitter being Twitter, but like right now on August 16th, I think it's Twitter being Twitter, but like come back to me in a month.
I mean, not to keep bringing them up, but like we just had this talk with Carl, like not even a month ago, where the whole conversation was like, how does Erik ten Hag manage the expectations, manage the conversation? Because that's as much a part of his job now as it is making sure that the players are doing what they're supposed to do on the field. And, you know, Carl asked us the question of if things aren't going exactly the way we'd like it to, you know, what's the situation like when we probably come back together to have a conversation at the World Cup in November? And it's just like, well, surely he'll be okay in the press come World Cup. And all of a sudden it seems like it's more than just the dickheads on Twitter. Not calling you a dickhead, Casey, but the other dickheads.
I mean, if
you're not the only one who made the illusion, I promise you're not the person I was calling out.
If Erik ten Hag loses 8 games without scoring a goal in his first 8 games, he's getting fired. But we're not
as it should.
Yeah.
See, my illusion.
You don't think they're buying into that project?
My illusion to Frank de Boer was, he had he didn't have an Ajax style of football, but he had a very defined style of football. It was like a very stripped back sort of do not concede, score a couple of goals, job done, works in Dutch league. And he obviously came into a Crystal Palace team. I think I don't know if he was in it before that, but he was like, I'm going to try and do this here. And trying to get James McArthur and whoever else was in midfield at that time to try and play like Ajax midfielders was never going to go down well. And my illusion was, he was the sort of same, bullheadedness is probably the same sort of thing, which you kind of get with Dutch managers of like, I have a style of football. I'm going to play that style of football. I'm going to get it across and I'm going to do it regardless of what happens along the way. And the issue was, is they didn't have the quality in the team to do the things that he wanted to do. And what I've just said then, does Ten Hag have the quality in the team to do the things that he wants to do? Even if he has the players in certain positions that he wants to do, does the rest of the team have enough quality in it that those players can actually do their jobs and kind of get across to the rest of the team? The answer this moment in time is a resounding no. We come to the end of the transfer window, he hasn't signed those players, and you're trying to still run about with Scott McTominay, Fred in the midfield doing shuttling runs when they can't pass under pressure. You got Bruno Fernandes basically being forced to create on his own because Sancho's being isolated. Rashford's not scoring. Ronaldo's doing whatever Ronaldo wants to do. Where do we get there? Where do we score the goals from? How do we get the ball from back to front? How do we protect against transitions? How do we build up from the back? All very important things that you need to think of as a manager. All very things that haven't been addressed and cannot be addressed just through a manager's coaching. Unless he completely breaks his system and decides, I'm going to play a completely different style of football. And even then, you're on a 50-50 of whether these players can go into a completely different style of football and just get enough points that he, at the end of the day, it's worth. You go, oh, Erik ten Hag played free at the back, very defensive football. We came about ninth. Do we keep him around? Because this isn't the project he sold us when he was being pitched to be manager. So, yeah. It basically, it's one of those like existential crisis moments that you kind of hope never has to come for him. Of am I going to, just looks in the mirror and Frank de Boer just looks back at him and he's like, yeah, I'm going to have to just not play that anymore and just hope for the best.
You're making me nervous for any team coming off of a MLS Cup next year and they have to replace their manager because they took a better job. Because Frank de Boer didn't do so well at Atlanta United.